It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. We Alaskans have a unique way to get into the backcountry on our state-owned railroad or ferry system, two of the most fun forms of transportation around. On today's show, we're talking about how the train and ferries can get families out to adventures, hiking, skiing, paddling, floating, and exploring in some truly exotic places. We'll learn about the opportunities and how you can do it with your family and how to make the plans. I'm excited because I love the Alaska Railroad and the Alaska Marine Highway System. I have my own wonderful memories from my childhood and with my own kids when they were younger. In the first half of the show, we'll be talking about the railroad, and in the second half, the ferries, and focusing on families the whole way. And I have our family expert in the studio who's going to be with me the whole time. Erin Kirkland is a freelance writer based in Anchorage. She's the author of Alaska on the Go, Exploring the 49th State with Children, and she's a publisher of the akonthego.com website, which is Alaska's family travel resource. Her work has appeared lots of different places, and she has a book coming out next year, about a year from now, Alaska on the Go, Exploring the Marine Highway System with Children. Thanks for being with us, Erin.
Hi, Charles. Good to be here.
And to talk about the railroad, in this first half, Tim Sullivan is the manager of external affairs at the Alaska Railroad. Thanks for being with us, Tim.
Oh, thanks, Charles. Thanks for having us.
So the season has kind of changed, but all the tourist trains are not running for the winter, but some of these lesser-known trains that really serve Alaskans to get Alaskans out into the snowy wilderness are running. And we were talking about one, which is a train that kind of goes north from Anchorage and goes to Fairbanks and gives folks access to all kinds of interesting places.
Yeah, that's our regular year-round scheduled service that we run, the Aurora Winter Train. It runs up to Fairbanks on Saturdays and back down on Sundays, and folks use that to access all sorts of areas from here to Talkeetna and then up through Hurricane and on all the way up to Denali and Fairbanks, and folks can get off at any number of places and get out into the wilderness and just enjoy the activity that goes on. The great thing about that train going up on Saturday, back on Sunday, is it's you can go out for an overnight somewhere. And then in the springtime, starting late February and all through March, we start a midweek service as well. What we've seen in recent years is come about late February, March time, folks are, the sun's out a little bit more.
Yeah,
folks
want to get out there. Yeah.
People want to get out there. And so there's a real opportunity to for more folks, more times to get up to Fairbanks or to get any of those areas, to Talkeetna, Denali area, yeah. Spend one night, spend three or four nights, and then catch the train coming back the other way. So it works out really well.
So the train is actually going to stop in Talkeetna at a regular station and at Denali. And I've seen people get off there with their skis. Denali's closed. But so what does that mean? It means you have millions of acres to yourself, right? And then also, but you can also just make it stop just like wherever, right? And this is one of the things that kind of blows your mind when you're on this train is that people are just sort of wherever right. They want to stop.
Well, you can in certain areas, from Talkeetna north up through Hurricane and through there up to Honolulu in that area. We do offer the whistle stop service, it's great for people who go out there, go hiking, go camping in the wintertime, go hunting out there. You know, there are folks who will actually hop on the train, put their guns and ammunition in the baggage car, as well as whatever game it is that they got, and right. They'll throw that in the baggage car and haul it back to town.
So I was on that train once coming back south. And we stop, and then there's a moose
right.
That somebody shot, and then, hey, guys, we need some help. And so everybody's jumping off to lift the moose into the baggage car. That is a truly Alaskan experience,
totally, right, Erin? Right? Yeah, you don't want to miss that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm sure you've done this with your kids, Erin.
Yeah, we sure have. One of our favorite trips in the winter is to go up to Talkeetna on Saturday and spend the night at Talkeetna Roadhouse and, absorb all that history and culture, and then do some skiing and snowshoeing and actually just kind of wandering around and hanging out.
Taking it easy, yeah.
Yeah, and we really like to do that over the holiday season because it's so busy. You can just hang around, and then at 4 o'clock, now I do have to say you don't exactly stop at a real station in Talkeetna.
Right,
in the wintertime, you're hanging out at the section house, which in and of itself is just a lot of Alaska culture and history. You're all hanging out in this concrete building, and if you need a ticket, you just go buy one from the guy who's there, and it's just this cool collection of Alaskan humanity and visitors, and people have their pies from the roadhouse. And for kids, it's just this interesting eclectic mix of outdoor fun and indoor fun and history and
super casual. Yeah,
yeah. You know, the museum in Talkeetna is open during the wintertime. It's not crowded. You did mention Denali. Denali is open in the wintertime. The Murray Science and Learning Center has a fantastic way that they're trying to connect with wintertime visitors. Mm. So in February, February and March is the perfect time to take a long weekend, go take the train up. The Denali Chamber of Commerce has a whole listing of places that are open for staying at. So go do that. Do some skiing. We had a great time last winter doing that. So that is something that I don't want to lessons to miss.
Driving those winter highways can be scary. So you take the railroad.
Exactly.
And also the other aspect here is that Alaska kids don't necessarily have that much experience with trains.
Right,
and
right.
For them to go on a railroad,
yes,
it is mind-blowing for them,
yes.
Right? I mean, it's really
yes.
exciting.
I never have to worry about my kid being bored. Any time we've taken the train, he always finds something to do. These trains are not that crowded in the wintertime. The mm-hmm. conductors are absolutely, I can't say enough about how fantastic they are with kids. You know, they'll stop and grab a moose antler that's, you know, by the side of the tracks, and they'll sit down with you when you're eating your dinner in the dining car. I mean, this is a true experience where the journey is part of the destination.
Yeah. So, Tim, I know that there's also a ski train, which is sort of for skiers who want to get out and sort of for a day in the backcountry by train. And maybe you also have some other special trains. Tell us about that opportunity.
You know, we do have a number of special trains that we run in our off season, but the ski train is really one of the big ones. We run that March 12th is when it's going to run this year, and several hundred folks, I think it's in the neighborhood of seven or 800 people are able to get on the train for a day, go up to Curry, go skiing up there, and it's just it's an adventure being on that train. It is a really good time.
It's a party. It's an 800 person moving party.
It is an 800, and there's polka bands on
there
it.
Are.
I mean, you really can't go wrong that way.
But, okay, now I'm going to tell a little bit about my childhood here because you're bringing some things back.
Well, and that's important. Kids have done this for years.
Oh my gosh. I did it as a little kid going down to Grandview, which
right.
I don't think you go to anymore because of avalanche
right.
issues
right.
and
right.
stuff. But I remember just like thinking, grown-ups behave this way, you know? Don't let anybody notice me because I'm having so much fun. Everybody's just
yeah.
having beer and dancing and yeah. the polka band. And, you know, the other thing that my family would do, we talked about Talkeetna, is a bunch of families would get together and they would take us up to Talkeetna on the train for a weekend. We'd ski in the backwoods up there. We'd stay at this old motel called Evil Alice's. I don't know if that's even still
there.
I'm
not sure if it's there anymore.
And they would rent, this was way before VHS movies were invented, so they would rent a 16-millimeter movie projector and show movies in the restaurant for us kids. And
I mean,
it was just
really?
Like such great memories. And then you get to ride on the train, the whole
yeah.
thing. Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. Those are the, when you can put those together with a lot of different families, that makes it fun.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I just returned from a family travel summit in Montana, and the current research shows that travel does actually change a child's brain in a positive way. I mean, these are challenging kind of experiences. They're very different culturally. They're very different, you know, physically. And so that kind of stuff, I mean, you remember all that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd never forget it.
Yeah, it's pretty special.
And it's sort of putting everybody on the same level,
yes.
too. The adults and the kids are all sort of there together.
God help us.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So I assume that there's some discounts probably in wintertime and also discounts for kids. What are the fares to do this?
For the ski train or for, well?
Well, let's we can't go through them all. So why don't we just do some sample fares, whatever you have in front of you that would be illustrative.
Well, I can tell you that for the ski train, the tickets went on sale today, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow.
So folks need to get online over at.
Do it quick.
They're over at AnchorageNordicSki.com. So that's the best place to go to check out for those tickets. And for the Nordic Ski Association members, they're running $135 a piece. If you're a non-member, it's $170 for those sorts of things. The regular fares are in the neighborhood of about $159, $169 per person to go from Anchorage to Fairbanks, about half that for kids. Encourage folks to get onto our website because the prices do change in the wintertime.
Uh-huh.
And then there are discounts for those who particularly like on the Hurricane Turn, who buy bulk number of tickets in order to get back and forth because
okay.
of the access they have in that area.
So most people probably don't go all the way to Fairbanks, though, because that's like a 12-hour trip each way.
Well, most don't, but I've made that trip and, you know, took my kids a couple of years ago. I had meetings up in Fairbanks and then decided to have them fly up and we take the train back in the middle of November. And really, it's a spectacular trip. When you get on the train, obviously, it's dark at 8 o'clock in the morning,
mm-hmm.
but by the time noon rolls around and you're coming through Denali and coming through that area and the sun's coming up, and then you get on the other side of the park and into Gold Creek and all those areas down south. And by the time you're getting to between Talkeetna and Wasilla, the sun's starting to go down again. It is some spectacular scenery in the wintertime that you can only see from the train. And getting those opportunities to get kids to go out and see these sorts of things are great. And like Aaron mentioned, doing the Talkeetna thing in the wintertime is spectacular.
Yeah. No, I did the trip all the way to Fairbanks about 25 years ago on an assignment. And it was, everything you're saying about the views is true. I mean, it's incredible. I would say it was also something of a marathon to ride 12 hours out, turn right around the next day, and ride 12 hours back.
Right. Yeah. You know, I always tell families, if you can get, and Alaska Airlines a lot of times will have a special going on with the railroad, you know, go one way and fly back. It's a long, long way for kids. And I've said my kid never gets bored, but, you know, it's 24 hours of train time, really. So you need to think about that a little bit. There's also a discount for Alaskans, correct? The Alaskans, not anymore? Okay.
No.
Because there used to be, and I know a lot of people have asked me about that, that there used to be a discount for Alaskans, but if that's...
Mentioned Hurricane Turn. Let's define what that is.
Hurricane Turn in the summertime is the service that we go from Talkeetna out to Hurricane and back on I think it's 5 days a week now that we're running that service. And then in the wintertime, we run it once a month. We run it on the first Thursday of the month. So the train went out this morning out of Anchorage, about 9 o'clock this morning, headed up to Talkeetna and then carried on to Hurricane. This is a good example of our flag stop service.
And Hurricane is nowhere. I mean, there's nothing in
Hurricane. Well, there's a big gulch there. Okay. There's a bridge that goes over the gulch. But
it's not like you're going to a town.
what we have is several hundred people who live, off the grid between Talkeetna and Hurricane. And what we provide is access into those areas for just about everything they need, whether it's getting themselves, their goods that they get from the store, construction materials, medicine, that sort of thing. We help them to get that sort of stuff out there. And it's a really important, critical service that we provide to our neighbors out there. In those roadless areas where otherwise they wouldn't be able to get things out there, and particularly during breakup or before freeze-up, that they can't access those areas either by snow machines or they're getting flooded out and they can't get out there in ATVs and that sort of stuff.
So how do they let you know that they need to be picked up? Is it... I know in the old days it was like wave a lantern or something, right?
Well, you've about got it. It is a flag stop service. So they are waving a flag out there where they are. The train doesn't move that fast through that area. A lot of times they give a heads up. They'll call into our folks at the station out in Talkeetna and let them know that they need to be picked up and what milepost they're going to be at. But a lot of time it's just our guys are coming down the track. They see somebody, you know, off the track, obviously, but holding a flag up or just waving their arm, just sitting there on the side of the tracks, waiting to be picked up. And we slow down, pick them up and take them into town or take them out again.
I think, you know, again, that's such an authentic Alaskan experience and it's so easy. I mean, people think, oh, I can't, you know, fly out to a village. I can't afford.
Right.
Well, you could jump on the train and go out and explore off the train or not, or just meet people as they get on and off. Because I've met some of the trippiest, craziest people on those trains getting on and off and hear their great stories of living out there. And some of the stories are just very romantic and interesting about people who
live
there. They truly
are. And, you know, it's worth noting, this is the last flag stop train in the United States. So this is really a piece of American history that you're not going to find anywhere else.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've said, and, you know, we've all experienced just how amazing that is to see these characters that get on and off the train and their gear.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're talking today about using our state-owned railroad and our state-owned ferry system to get out to the outdoors, get to opportunities that would be really hard to access otherwise, especially with families, because this is a safe way to get kids out to the outdoors. You know, you can't always haul them a long way backpacking or doing a lot of other cross-country trekking, but the railroad and the ferries are really easy ways to get to some really cool places. So that's our topic today, and I've got two experts in the studio with me right now, Tim Sullivan from the Alaska Railroad and Aaron Kirkland, who's a journalist web writer and also author about family travel. And her book is called Alaska on the Go, Exploring the 49th State with Children. I wanted to talk a little bit about the stuff you can do south of Anchorage, some of which people may not even be aware of yet because it hasn't been around now that long, like going to Spencer Glacier and going to Grandview, and that's a daily thing. Tell us about that, Tim. I mean, you're essentially getting on a train and it's taking you up in the mountains and you hop off and there you are.
Yeah, so that's summertime service for us. Mm-hmm. We don't have any wintertime passenger service that goes south of Anchorage.
Right.
But in the summertime, the Glacier Discovery train leaves out of Anchorage, goes to Whittier, and then turns around, goes to Portage, then south to Spencer Glacier and to Grandview, where it turns around, comes back to Spencer Glacier and through Portage again. It's a really great opportunity for folks to either take a day-long trip where they hop on the train in Anchorage or drive down to Portage, pick up the train there, take a 30-minute train ride into Spencer, get dropped off. The Forest Service has guides down there. There's kayaking. There's just a ton of hiking going around there on just phenomenal, well-taken care of, well-maintained trails, as well as there's a new cabin that the Forest Service opened up last summer that's for rent that people can get to and rent on our website. And as an opportunity, you're out there for four and a half hours. The train comes back around, picks you up, takes you right back to Portage again for 30 minutes. It's just a great way to spend an afternoon. You can take the, you know, you can take the kids out about 11 o'clock. You'd be there to pick up, hit the train at the right time, and you'd be back to the depot before six. And as I like to say, what I do from there is then just head to the Double Muskie for dinner. It works out really well.
Yeah, I did this about a year ago with a buddy with mountain bikes and rode up to the face of the glacier, and not difficult, but fun mountain biking to get up there. Also, there were people there with kayaks and canoes,
yep.
A bunch of people camping at Lakeside.
Yep.
And there's some beautiful trail construction work that's going on down there, which I guess is part of the future plan, right, to get over to the next valley?
Yeah, over to Grandview. And then this is in our partnership with the Forest Service as part of their Access to the Parks program. We're going to be looking at eventually five whistle stops that we do have all the way along that trail that's off the road system all the way down to Moose Pass. So it'll be a great opportunity to have these little cabins, little recreation areas and campsites that'll be connected by trails all the way down between Moose Pass and Spencer Glacier, giving folks a really good opportunity to get out, grab the trains in a number of places that they stop along the way, and see what's out there that's off the roads that most people don't get an opportunity to do.
It's a really, really beautiful spot. And it's also the fact you get there by train, then the train leaves and there's no motorized sort of thing going on around you, changes the whole character, don't you think, Erin?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. We were there at Spencer over the Labor Day weekend, and there was a family of 12 who was camping at that group campsite there. So they had jog strollers and wagons and traditional backpacks, and they schlepped the kids and the grown-ups in with these, you know, because you're only walking, I don't know, maybe a mile to the group campsite there. And they camped the whole weekend. It was stunningly beautiful. And they said the kids just had a blast. And they brought their dogs. You can bring your dog. You have to bring a kennel for your dog, though. So it was this whole big party of people that was going. And they had everybody toddler to tweenager, I think. So there definitely was quite the age range. And they had a super time. So did we.
And that baggage compartment or that baggage car is seemingly infinite space in it for that kind of thing. What are the rules about that, Tim? I mean, what can you... Is there stuff you can't bring, or is there like a maximum?
No. You can bring what you need to take out there. I mean, obviously, you need to be, don't take more than you can haul once you get it off the train. But we, you know, folks can take cooking fuel and that sort of stuff. We have compartments outside the train where they can store that sort of stuff. Everything that they need to take, obviously, they need to take their own water, their own camping gear, their own food. But those campsites out there are just absolutely beautiful and well-maintained. Partially because they're just so new that the Forest Service has been working on them and done a fantastic job out there. Mm-hmm. And we've just really enjoyed our partnership with them and how well this has worked out.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really great opportunity for families who are just kind of, maybe they're new to Alaska or they're new parents and they're just trying to, you know, eke their way into a backcountry experience. Mm-hmm. As Tim said, those trails are so well maintained that, you know, new walkers or parents who have a stroller with them, I mean, they're going to be able to feel like they're truly accessing Alaska's backcountry. And that's really what we all want, right?
Good introduction. Yeah.
We really want to be able to, you know, feel like we're getting into the essence of what is Alaska. And so I think the railroad and the Forest Service's partnership has just been so valuable for families. And I'm really looking forward to the continuation of that.
Mm-hmm. There's that lake in front of the glacier. And then is there... do people do river floats out there?
We've done it. Yeah, down the Placer River.
Tell us about that.
Oh, that's another great, I mean, there's just so much going on, and all of it is great opportunities. There are several companies out there that will help you, whether, like we said, the kayaking out on the lake and going up to the face of the glacier, or do the rafting trip down the Placer River, and then the train does pick you up on its way back. So you come out of there, out of Spencer Glacier, ride down for 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah. So almost, not even that. We only floated for a couple hours.
Yeah, float for a couple hours, and then where you pull out, the train stops, picks everybody up, and off you go back to Portage again. So you
very exciting for my kid.
Yeah, so it's a good introductory kid level.
Oh gosh, I think our son was 4 when we took him on the first time. So for those of you who are experienced rafters, it's pretty quiet. But it, again, and if you have visiting grandparents, you have other folks, coming. It's excellent multi-generational. Yeah, kind of experience.
It's good to start with that sort of thing.
And it's super fun to have the train waiting for you when you get
there. It is that. It makes you feel pretty important.
Yeah, it really does.
And it's if you get wet or whatever, then the train is warm and cozy.
Yes.
And we've always got hot cocoa. Yeah, you keep your stuff on board, and we've always got hot cocoa and coffee for the folks who hop on board too, just to warm them up.
Cool. So something else we've done, I'm sure many of our listeners have done, is ride the train down to Seward, which, in my opinion, is the most spectacular section of rail I've been on anywhere. I mean, obviously, the Denali Run is beautiful because that's like the tallest mountain in North America. But that ride down to Seward is just mind-blowing as you go through those canyons and by the glaciers and everything. And my visiting relatives like go gaga over it. And then at the other end, you can go to the Sea Life Center.
Right.
You can go fishing. You could take a boat out to Kenai Fjords. And then our strategy is usually to drive back. But I know you have packages where you can do it in one day or do the next day, but it adds some flexibility to be able to drive one way. That means somebody has to miss out on the train ride. But Aaron, what's your strategy? How do you do that?
So we usually, what we like to do is go down and spend the night. Like you mentioned, there's always some good deals to be had if you just peruse around in that website, because the railroad does a really good job of especially, as the season starts winding up. But we have done it in a day, and we've done it with very small children. It's quite doable. You just have to be prepared for that, kind of experience. You are in Seward for most of the day. So if you're going to come back, you need to kind of equip yourself for that ever-changing Seward weather, and if you go on the day cruise and things. So,
but I think I've done it in a day when I was doing travel books, and I found that, boy, I'm getting up early, I'm having a very busy, active day,
yes,
and then I'm getting home really late. I find it to be a lot for one day.
Yeah, it is a ton of stuff, but we had, like we said, we have people in town, and we had one day, and you can certainly do it, but it is an early and late day. But, it's worth it. I mean, again, you're going through some amazing, countryside. I will say the best decision we ever made was to upgrade to Gold Star service, if Tim would like to talk about that for a little bit. Okay. It really made the difference between a okay train experience for that long and a really, really great train experience.
So that's like first class.
That's a good way to put it. We have adventure class on our trains, and then we have the Gold Star service. And adventure class is, sitting in the big comfy chairs that lean way back and enjoying the view out the windows.
And I would say, if you're used to Amtrak, adventure class is better than that. I mean, it's still
There's no comparison.
I mean, virtue of the views only.
And the comfort and the cleanliness, too.
Yeah, we've got all of that going for us. But the Gold Star service is a good step above that. We've got the double-decker Gold Star cars where people are actually up higher. We've got the domed windows all the way across, and of course we've got the decks on the back, so people have the opportunity to stand out there and really get in a good view of the of what they're going through and stay out of the rain while still being outside.
Right.
And then the food service that we have on Gold Star, which is all-inclusive as of this summer, is just fantastic. The raves we've had about our food through ESS is just top-notch, and folks really, really like that. And so the step up to Gold Star service is worth it a lot of the time, especially if you're going to be spending all day on a train.
Yep.
And if it's your big summer treat, yeah.
Yeah.
So give us some fares. So I don't know if you have those in front of you, but for no? Yeah, well, we'll have to look those up on
there
the website.
There are so many fares to consider on the Alaska Railroad.
How much is it? But is it like double for the Gold Star, or is it like 50% more?
It's about 30 to 50% more to be on Gold Star service. So,
okay.
Yeah, so it's and it is well worth it, considering that the food is all-inclusive and and just the comfort is great all the way around on our trains in every class, but there's just something a little extra that comes with the Gold Star service.
And we haven't touched on Whittier. I mean, if there's great kayaking in Whittier, great fishing.
Oh, yeah.
Also boat tours, also public use cabins, and you can get there on the train rather than driving.
You can on that Glacier Discovery train that heads out there every day in the summertime. It's fantastic.
And that's a really good point to emphasize, the synergy between all of these businesses during this busy, busy summer season. So, you know, you want to be able to take a tour and not to worry, because you don't have to worry if the train's going to be on time, because it is, because they know that. They know you have to get on your boat and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So it's an excellent way to kind of start exploring South Central Alaska.
Much more relaxing, and kind of turns your whole day into an outing rather than driving to
exactly.
the outing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Great. Well, anything else we should touch on? I mean, I feel like we've covered a lot here.
Well, I know we're talking outdoors, but one of the things that we've got coming up is a lot of specialty trains through the wintertime. We talked a little bit about the ski train, but for kids, we've got two specialty trains that we run in that, well, and not just two, but two opportunities that we run trains. We have the holiday trains that come up in December. We've got two trains a day, one going on December, two on December 5th, two on December 12th. Santa on the trains. It's one of those things that sells out quickly, and those are on our website and for sale now. So encourage folks to get out there to AlaskaRailroad.com and check that out. And then coming up in Easter, of course, every year we've got our Easter trains that sell out as well. And those should be up on the website here in the next 4 to 6 weeks. And if folks hop onto the social medias, somewhere on the Facebooks and the Twitters and the Instagrams, we're on there as well. And we're always putting out the notifications of that stuff so people can be caught up to date and don't miss opportunities to go on trains, whether it's an adult train or whether it's a kid train. There's a heck of a lot of opportunities out there.
and I think the adults want to go on the train, but the kids are a good excuse, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as a grown-up, who doesn't like to hear the train come into the station, you know, and, you know, get on board and wait a little bit till it leaves. And when it leaves, you can hear and feel the energy. Everybody's like, oh, we're going. Even the grown-ups.
Very cool. So, we're going to move away from the topic of trains in a few minutes and say goodbye to Tim. Thanks for being with us, Tim.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Tim Sullivan is with the Alaska Railroad. He's the manager of external affairs. In the second half of the show, we're going to be talking about the Alaska Marine Highway System, which is also an incredible way to get to some stupendous places. But one more word about trains first. Remote homes and cabins are a mainstay of life in the 49th state. Hardy Alaskans don't consider it a burden to build on property that's only accessible by float plane, boat, or snow machine. And then there's the train. In an area north of Talkeetna, the last true flag stop train in the country is the only access cabin owners have to their wilderness retreats. APRN's Annie Fite rode along a few years ago and filed this story.
The train is called the Hurricane Turn, which sounds a bit ominous, but as I settle into a seat, the passenger directly across from me looks to be the friendly sort. You know the type, kind eyes, a calm demeanor, well-groomed.
This is Raven. She's a good dog. She's probably the smartest dog I've ever had.
Rules, like no dogs allowed, are in short supply on this train. But there is no shortage of rugged Alaskans with plenty of stories to tell. Raven's owner, Michelle Finley, grew up riding the train. Her parents raised her on a homestead 30 miles from Talkeetna. As a kid, the Hurricane Turn was her only link to the outside world. Now she lives in Eagle River, and it's a link to her past.
Going up to the homestead, that's our sanity time. So we go up there just to kind of recover our balance.
Two of Michelle's teenage sons are with her on the train. Greg Finley is excited to spend a weekend at the homestead, but it hasn't always been that way. When he was little, he was a reluctant visitor, mainly because he hated the smelly, bug-infested outhouse. But now he sees the appeal of a place where there's no phone, internet, or running water.
But the reason why I like it the most is because it's just like, there's no people for like miles. It's just like surreal sometimes because, you know, it's just nice to be alone.
The homestead is at mile 258.3, and it's a stop the engineer knows well. The train breaks at an opening in the trees. A small turquoise house is visible in the distance. Raven, Michelle, and her sons hop off as the crew waves goodbye.
Pick you up tomorrow.
For the Hurricane Turn's conductor, this is a new job. Wade Sherwood has been working for the Alaska Railroad for 30 years, but it's his first year on this train. And he says keeping track of the comings and goings of all the passengers was daunting when he started a few months ago.
Well, my word, yes, yeah. Well, if you don't know this job very well, and you come out here with all the different stops you have to make, and who's who, and whose gear goes where, it's intimidating. But now I got it all figured out, so it was pretty rough at first.
Occasionally, the train makes impromptu stops to pick up travelers who flag it down. But for the most part, Wade knows where people are going to get on and off. And he knows pretty much everyone by name.
Oh, yeah, it's exciting. You meet some real characters out here. I mean, it's cool. And it's not an easy place. And it's a rare person that can spend time here and make a life. And they're all unique people in their own way.
Wade oversees the action on the hurricane turn, like the mayor of a small town.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Tom?
Yeah.
Is that your bag and your gun?
Yeah.
Okay.
And for locals riding the train, it's like taking a stroll down Main Street where you never know who you're going to run into. Tim Huffman is heading to his cabin for the weekend.
Yeah, you see people and get to know them and swap stories about whether the bears were putting new scratch marks on your door and whether the moose were in the yard and how hard it rained last weekend. It's really great.
Most of the passengers are like Tim, going to recreational cabins, but a few hardy Alaskans live out here year-round. Hardin Mevin built his home 34 years ago. He enjoys the lifestyle.
Not a lot of stress. We just deal with staying warm, making sure we have water, and making sure we have enough to eat. And then everything beyond that is your choosing.
One thing that connects these Alaskans is a desire to live or at least experience a very simple existence that rewards hard physical labor. 40 years ago, Ken Flynn staked out a property 2 miles off the tracks. It took him 5 years to build the 10x13 cabin. He met his wife, Julie, a few years later.
When I first met Ken, I said, why is this cabin so small? And he kind of gave me this dirty look because, you know, he felled all the trees and he built the cabin, and everything in the cabin came up on his back or somebody else's back, you know, well, mostly his. So that's why the cabin's small.
The Flynns hike into their place from the train, and at this time of year, that means a strenuous slog with heavy backpacks through thick underbrush and Devil's Club. When their stop comes up, they climb down from the baggage car, and Wade hands them their backpacks and trekking poles.
Got it. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
See you Sunday.
See you Sunday. Bye. Thanks. Bye.
Julie says it's always a little strange when the train pulls off and leaves them just standing there, on their own in the middle of a vast wilderness. But that's exactly how she and Ken like it.
Bye, Annie. Bye. Have fun.
For AK, I'm Annie Feit.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 8 on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
We're back. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and our topic today is using our state-owned railroad and ferry system to get to the outdoors, especially with families. And my continuing guest for today's show is Aaron Kirkland, who is familiar to our listeners. Thanks for being with us, Aaron.
Yeah, thanks, Charles.
Aaron is a writer based in Anchorage. She's the author of Alaska on the Go, Exploring the 49th State with Children. Her website, akonthego.com, is linked to our site at alaskapublic.org. Just click on today's show, and she's got a new book coming out, which is highly apropos of our next segment, which is Alaska on the Go, Exploring the Marine Highway System with Children. That'll be out in about a year. And with us now also is Danielle Doyle, who's marketing manager for the Alaska Marine Highway System, and joining us from Ketchikan. Thanks for being with us, Danielle.
Thanks, Charles. Glad to be here.
So I have these very warm memories of riding the ferry system as a kid. That's how my family first got to Alaska in 1966. So
wow,
yeah. So that's almost 50 years ago. So I guess I probably have more experience, at least in longevity, than my guess. It's still just a fantastic way for kids with families to ride, and it feels so safe, and it's so exciting as a kid. And Aaron, it sounds like you have done a tremendous amount of this you're working on a book with your family.
Right. Yeah. You know, we have sailed, I think, every route. And what we appreciate the most, I think, is the opportunity to spend this amazing time together. Because, you know, as you know, traveling around Alaska can get a little stressful if you're, you know, hopping off planes, into cars. And there's something about the ferry, like the train, that just kind of invokes this wonderful sense of family time and just kind of being in the moment. And it's another one of those journeys, the destination kind of opportunities. And we are so fortunate to have it here in Alaska.
Yeah, I kind of remember this moment that the ferry's leaving the dock, and as a kid, you're watching the dock slip away, and then you say to your brother, like, let's explore the ferry.
Yeah, okay, let's go. Then,
and check it all out.
You know, we've been taking the ferry with our son, in research for this book and the first books, you know, since he was really very small, and still, he's, you know, almost 11 now, and as soon as we get on, he dumps his stuff in a corner and says, all right, I'll catch you later, you know?
Yeah.
And that's so exciting to allow kids a little bit of that, you know, freedom to explore and, know where we are and we know where he is. It's just so much fun.
Yeah. So, Danielle, one of the things that I think makes the ferry an ideal way to do casual travel in Alaska, that is where you don't have to plan every single detail in advance, is that you don't charge extra, at least if I'm remembering correctly. If I'm riding the ferry through the Inside Passage and I get off in Juneau, it doesn't cost me a ton extra to get off and spend some time there and then just get another ferry heading south. Unlike a lot of forms of transportation where having stopovers costs extra and you have to do a lot of planning and so forth. Is that true, that you can sort of just get off in different places and explore them?
Absolutely. That's one of the beautiful things about ferry travel is, you know, that we really encourage that to stop and stay in the communities along the way and see all the wonderful things that, you know, Alaska has to offer. And because all of our fares are based on distance, unless you're adding a lot of distance with your stops or you're backtracking, it really does not add a lot to your overall fare. So it really is a very economical way for you to stop and explore the community.
Yeah, and if you want to, if you feel like you need a cabin or you need to bring a car, then often you'll need reservations well in advance. But the sort of the traditional fun way of riding the ferry is just a walk on, and maybe you need to set up a tent on the solarium, or maybe you didn't need to sleep in a chair. But in any event, you have this flexibility then, and for the most part, you almost never need a reservation to walk on. Is that true still, Danielle? That's how I remember it.
Absolutely. We usually always have passenger space available on the ferry unless, you know, there's a special event going on. Sometimes, you know, during some of the big races that take place in Northland Canal or during the state fair in Haines, those types of situations, you know, we do get a sold-out status as far as passenger space. But for the most part, you're absolutely right, Charles. You can just walk on board, bring a tent, bring your sleeping bag, sleep up under the solarium. They do have overhead heaters, and you know, some of the people that I've engaged with in our outreach efforts to promote the ferry have told me just some amazing stories about the people that they've met when they've camped on deck and just hung out under the solarium. So I think it really is one of those great opportunities, especially for families, to really build some special memories.
Yeah, camping out on a deck of a ship, which I have done, is truly, we're talking about unique Alaskan experiences.
Yeah.
That is one of them. And also, of course, there's running water nearby. You know, there's a bathroom. One thing that I learned is bring a roll of duct tape, right?
Yes.
Just tape your
yes.
tent down to the deck.
Yes,
right?
You do. Yes. And that's part of the whole process, you know, when you get on board, that's so exciting when you set up your tent and you see everybody else doing the same thing. And you know, you hear that, and everybody's trying to slap their tent down on the deck.
Absolute necessity.
You know, there really is no better way for kids to meet and I hate to say this word, real Alaskans, but you know what I mean?
Let's meet strangers. Usually kids are only meeting people there, but there could be a guy playing the guitar up there.
There usually is. Yeah. But there's people that are using the ferry as like they're truly as a highway. So there's people going to medical appointments. There's people catching the ferry so they can get to an airport. There's people visiting family. There's people like us who are just touring around. So it's this wonderful mix of people and experiences that your kids are going to get that, I don't think they're going to get anywhere else.
Yeah. So Southeast Alaska has a lot of really, really comfy little small towns like Petersburg and Wrangell and Haines and Skagway and places that, I mean, the bigger towns are great too, but these little towns are totally navigable by bicycle. And so you can actually, if you're from Anchorage or from South Central Alaska, and you want to explore Southeast, you've never been there, I think probably a lot of people would say that was true. You can just drive down to Haines, leave your car in Haines, and bring your bikes along. Put the bikes on the ferry, and then when you hit these little towns, get off and go mountain biking. There's usually great roads there may be logging roads and trails you can bike on, you can get around. And you can even, I think, bring a kayak or that kind of thing. Is that right, Danielle? And that's pretty reasonably priced, I think, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you're right. It's a fantastic way to explore the communities of Southeast Alaska because most of them are relatively small. And, you know, they do have great opportunities for off-road biking as well. But, you know, we even see people get on the ferries in Bellingham on their bicycles with a kayak on a trailer, you know, behind the bike. So
amazing.
I mean, there's just so many opportunities to get out and see it. But yeah, it's one of the most economical ways that you can travel through the state. You know, your passenger fare and the bike, it's relatively inexpensive. So fantastic way.
Yeah, the human-powered aspect is very appealing. And here in South Central Alaska, we, of course, have the ferry that goes from Whittier over to Cordova and Valdez. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to talk about both of those communities for a moment. I actually once took my family for a week-long vacation in Cordova just because there is so much to do there.
Tons.
That it's kind of mind-blowing, and it's a great place for bikes. You wouldn't really have to drive. You could take your bike and bike out onto the Delta. Tons of trails you could explore. Beautiful, I mean, if it's sunny, if you get one of those rare days, beautiful beaches on the Copper River and then incredible kayaking and fishing from the Cordova Harbor. Love that. Another thing is it's for a bit more ambitious trip is to take your bike to Valdez and bike the highway, though that's obviously a pretty challenging trip. Aaron, and that's, I remember doing that as a little kid too, on the Bartlett.
Isn't it amazing what our parents made us do?
That's right.
You know, we love Valdez also because the history there is so important to Alaska and South Central Alaska. I mean, there's a lot of things, and unfortunately some not so great things that have happened in the Valdez area, the earthquake and the oil spill, and Valdez as a community has done a really good job of maintaining the integrity of those events so that you can understand them better and explain them to your kids, kind of as this whole global stewardship and you know, kind of how a town was essentially buried, you know, by water. And they, instead of just saying, all right, we're done, they picked up and moved over, you know, a couple miles. So great biking there, great hiking in Valdez. They're very warm.
That trail that runs out to Sheridan Glacier where there's some public use cabins.
Yes, there's some cabins out there. Mm-hmm. They have a great park out there. There's Robe Lake Lodge is a really nice family-run operation. They have some nice events, too. Their 4th of July is just this lovely small-town kind of parade, you know, with candy being thrown off fire trucks. And, you know, my son loves to go visit there because he feels like he's part of the community, and that's a really important aspect of traveling. And I think with all of the small towns throughout the marine highway system is that you're not a stranger. You become part of the fabric of that community, and that's pretty neat.
That's very true. Cordova and Valdez. Yeah. Danielle, it seems like the schedule has been pretty good to do a quick trip from Anchorage down to Cordova to Valdez, especially since the fast ferry was put in. It's pretty frequent service.
It is. During the summer months, it runs almost every day. So, the service is great. Even if you Thursday afternoon, you decide, hey, after work on Friday, let's go take a weekend trip over to Cordova or Valdez. Absolutely doable, you bet. And, you know, I just wanted to point out your earlier segment with the railroad, too. Fantastic way for people in the Anchorage area to take the railroad down to Whittier and then get on the ferry and just have a great, weekend without having to worry about taking the car. So there's some great opportunities to combine both of those means of transportation as well.
Leave right. the car at home.
And then in the wintertime, the service, I'm sure, is a lot less because just there must be much less passenger volume.
There is a little bit less volume in the wintertime, and that's when we do a lot of maintenance on the ferries. So there is a little bit of a reduction in the wintertime schedule. But and just like, you know, there are certain areas and routes that we don't service in the wintertime, the Aleutian chain being one. So there is a bit of a reduction there. But, yeah, still great service to most of the communities along the route.
And folks can find out about those schedules on our website, where we've linked to the Alaska Marine Highways website. So go to alaskapublic.org, click on today's show, and you'll find links to everything we're talking about today. This is Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth. We're talking about using our state ferry system to get to the outdoors, especially with families. It's a really good way to do it. Erin Kirkland is in the studio with me. Erin is a writer and author. She wrote a book called Alaska on the Go, Exploring the 49th State with Children. And Danielle Doyle is with me. She's a marketing manager for the Alaska Marine Highway System. Danielle mentioned the trip out to the Aleutians, which is something that I've always dreamed about doing. And there was an article in the newspaper about it not too long ago. I have taken the ferry to Kodiak mm-hmm. with my kids for Memorial Day,
yep.
Which Fest. Was unbelievable. I mean, it rained, but I mean,
yeah.
gosh, what a memorable trip it Absolutely. Was. So gorgeous. But Erin, you've actually been all the way out to Unalaska?
We did. We went to Unalaska Dutch Harbor in June this year, and Danielle knows just how long we planned to get that route done, because that was kind of the last link for the book, and uh-huh. I thought, oh, should we do it? Do you think our kiddo's old enough? And so we departed from Homer and then went over to Kodiak, spent the day in Kodiak because the ferry has, you know, like a layover there. So you have a whole day to explore Kodiak. And then the best part is that you just kind of hip hop down the peninsula and then on into the chain, going to some communities that, oh my goodness, Charles, the culture and you know, the people and their jobs and industry and all kinds of things going on. And it takes about 4 days to get down there. And then you end up in Dutch Harbor in Alaska. And we spent about 3 days exploring that area, which surprised me to no end at the amount of stuff there mm-hmm. was to do. And, you know, the Unalaska Dutch Harbor Visitors Bureau is so welcoming to people. They want people to come visit, and it was really exciting to be able to help promote that amazing area. Tons of hiking,
yeah,
tons of history,
and all that World War II history is fascinating. Wow. And probably yes. very appealing to kids.
Yes, it definitely was, because they've left kind of the infrastructure of the bunkers and the turrets and things, and they're all over town, and you can climb up a grassy hillside, and you know, there are no bears there. So that was kind of a major hit for the family. We thought that was really pretty good. So you don't have to worry about that. And
no bears, no trees.
Yes, and that was even better, because you can see for miles. I felt like I was in like the Scottish Isles or something like that. It was really, really different from what I had expected. And we can't wait to go back.
Yeah, even if you've lived in Alaska all your life, the Aleutians are mind-blowing when you first go out there.
And the history is mm-hmm. is just so, goes back so far, thousands and thousands of years. So it's definitely worth a trip. I will say we lucked out with weather. I know, and Danielle can reinforce this, it is not always calm.
I've actually been on the Tustamina when like virtually everybody in the boat was seasick.
Yeah. So parents, you know, the caveat to this amazing trip is that the parents really, really, really need to be prepared for anything. I would also say a stateroom is the way to go, because the Tustamina, she's a little smaller vessel. And until, you know, we get a new one, there's a lot less room for just mm-hmm. kind of camping out. And so you need to be very cognizant of the fact that this itinerary requires some very detailed planning. And Danielle, I think we made our reservations pretty much a year in advance, correct?
Yeah, you did. And that's one of the things, that's a good point. It is such a fantastic trip. And you know, even people who have been in Alaska, all over interior Alaska, residents come and they tell me that was mind-blowing. It was just such a fantastic trip. It was more than I ever expected. And so I would urge everybody to get out and see this section of our beautiful state. But Erin is correct. It does sell out very quickly, because it is only service during the summer months, and it is pretty limited service. So if that's something that you're planning, you really need to get out ahead of the curve.
Yeah, good point. And give us, we haven't gotten into this, and I don't want to forget to do it. In terms of fares, is there, the ferries generally are not very expensive. As I recall, kids under 12 are half off. Is that how it works?
That is correct. Actually, kids 6 to 11 travel for half price, half of the adult fare. And then kids under 6 actually travel free. So it's a great way to travel with your kids because it is relatively expensive. And the ferry is very scalable for passenger fares. It's one of the most economical ways that you can travel through the state. So
give us an example of like a fare between two typical communities. I don't know, Juneau and Skagway or Whittier and Cordova, just to give folks a sort of sense of scale.
Yeah, absolutely. Whittier to Cordova, you're looking at about $89 for a passenger fare. You can take your bike on board for about $13. If you're traveling with a 15-foot vehicle, you're going to be looking roughly, I think, about $100. And again, it starts to get a little more expensive if you are traveling with a vehicle, if you do decide you want to rent a stateroom. But, you know, just on a larger scale, if you were to get on in Bellingham and ride all the way to Whittier, you'd be looking at about $570.
Right. And there are more people who want to take cars than there is space on the car
right.
deck. So you need to make those reservations way ahead if that's the adventure that you're after. You need to plan that. Well, how does that reservation system work, Danielle? I mean, when would you need to plan if you want to do some kind of a driving adventure using the ferry, say in the Inside Passage?
You know, our mainline routes, which are the routes that actually run the longer distances from Bellingham up the Inside Passage, from Prince Rupert, the same, those tend to sell out a little quicker because they are heavily utilized by our visitors during the summer months. Our schedules are typically out around this type of year. And they usually start to sell out by about the first of the year. So if you have certain dates that you really want to travel within, if that's your vacation window, so to speak, you want to probably call prior to the first of the year or no later than, maybe March. But if you're pretty flexible on your dates, oftentimes you can call a month in advance and still find space. So it really kind of depends on which route you're traveling on and how far you're going.
So when that schedule comes out, that's when everything is available. And so if you want to have your pick, it's good to be thinking about it in the next month or so.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've all heard about the budget cuts and about concerns about state revenue. Can you have any sense yet of how that's going to affect the ferry system?
Yes. You know, the state budget situation has certainly affected, all the state departments, and the Marine Highway is certainly no exception. I think, as a result of that, schedules for 2016 summer are definitely going to be a little more streamlined than they have been in the past. It's still our mission to provide the service that we always have to all of the communities. It just might be a little more spread out than it has been in the past. So again, I would just urge people to try to plan ahead and make those reservations as soon as they know they might want to travel.
Okay, that's good advice. And so you won't be losing communities presumably, but maybe just less service and so fewer sailings and that kind of thing.
Correct.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Now, I don't does the Kennecott still run between South Central Alaska and Southeast Alaska? Is that cross Gulf service, does that still exist?
It does, absolutely. We just ran that this last summer. I think it's planned to continue next summer. It runs from Bellingham across the Gulf of Alaska up to Whittier and on to Kodiak.
That's another big one, isn't it? That's another adventure.
It is.
Did you actually do that, Erin?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, you've done everything.
So that's the one, and I have to say again, this talks about the critical element of transportation. A lot of our military families who are transitioning from, let's say, Eielson or Joint Base Elmendorf, they use that ferry to get down to their next duty station. And so that's another full one, isn't it, Danielle? I mean, there's a lot of people that take that during the summer months who are transitioning in and out of the state. But it's, it can be another little wild one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you're out in the Gulf of Alaska, you can bet that there's going to be rough weather. And, you learn certain things as a parent. One thing I learned is, Dramamine should be taken before it's needed.
At least, yeah. And it's something, I'm always looking at. And it's interesting, Charles. Seasickness in kids sometimes manifests itself in a very different way. If you've never been seasick, it's hard to describe to somebody. So, you know, it can be a headache. It can be just kind of this lethargy. Mm-hmm. And so I would spend our trip kind of keeping my eye on my son. And anytime he'd say, yeah, I just feel a little weird. Like, here you go. And it's good to talk to your pediatrician about what dosages for kids, because it does vary by weight. And you don't want to knock your kids out, because then, you know, you're kind of missing on the experience. But you don't want them sick either. So there's a lot of strategies that parents can employ. They just need to talk to their healthcare provider.
My experience in boating with kids in a lot of settings is that if you can distract them.
Yes.
Sometimes that's all it takes to get rid of seasickness. Yep. Also, fresh air.
Yep.
And look at the horizon.
And we like to say, look up and out, up and away. Uh-huh. You know, so you're looking up and then you're looking way out. And it truly is a gift to be able to, kind of manage your seasickness a little bit. Yeah. But, you know, you do really get your sea legs. You know, we don't have really trouble with that anymore because, you know, we've traveled by boat a ton of times. So, but, you know, it's just something good to be aware of.
Well, I'd like to ask both of you about preparing or how to get ready for one of these trips. Suppose you're going to be going camping. Suppose you're even tenting on the deck of the boat. There's a lot of planning when you're traveling with kids. Any tips that you want to share about how to make sure you have a good trip? I mean, there's some things that you're always going to have, like you have some kind of first aid kit and a few Band-Aids and those sorts of things. Anything special that you think of, Aaron, for a ferry journey?
Well, I think, honestly, the first thing that comes to my mind is stuff to keep them busy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because, you know, it's not fast. True. Yes, the ferry, the chug-chug of the ferry motor is definitely true. So in the book, I'm going to be talking a lot more about this, and I have a lot of quotes from parents and kids who tell me what works. And that I've had kids say, you know, my mom made me bring a suitcase full of Legos and lots of books. Remember, there's no internet out there. You're very, very sparse in that wireless department, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
So the ferry does provide things like puzzles and a few games, but we usually bring an entire bag of stuff to do. But that's the time when you can do these things together as a family. We bring binoculars for everybody. Everybody has a camera or a phone that they can take pictures, things like that. And, you know, and you got to pack for the weather.
Yeah.
Got to pack for the weather.
Danielle, do you have any tips as we just close out here?
You know, I think that's great tips from Aaron. You know, and during the winter, we transport a lot of school groups because obviously that's how these schools, especially in the smaller villages in Southeast Alaska, that's how they move around. They do their sporting competitions, and it's great because some of those coaches have come up with some fantastic ideas, and I know most of those teams, they have big boxes of playing cards and puzzles and things to keep the kids entertained while they're on board. So
snacks.
I think those are all great
food
tips. And
a lot of quarters for the video games.
Yeah.
There you go.
I had a fun experience talking to a kid who was traveling from Wrangell to Juneau, and he'd lived all his life in Wrangell, tiny little town. He said, I'm so excited. I'm going to get to go to McDonald's for the first time.
Yes.
And you just think like, wow, I like having my kid go to a place where there's no internet, there's no phone, there's no McDonald's to find out, you know, what that Alaska experience is all about.
You got
that's
it.
Part of the ferry and the trains.
You got it.
Well, great. Thanks so much for being with me. This has been a really fun show, and it's really inspired me to think about what I want to do next summer. Danielle Doyle, Marketing Manager with the Alaska Marine Highway System, was with us from Ketchikan. Thanks for being with us, Danielle.
Thank you.
And Aaron Kirkland, who is an author and produces a website. Her book is called Alaska on the Go, Exploring the 49th State with Children. The site, which you can link to through our site at alaskapublic.org, is akonthego.com. Thanks for being here, Aaron.
Well, thank you, Charles.
And next week's show is about scientists going out into the wilderness to do their work. They avoid outdoor adventures. They have things to get done. So we're going to learn about how they do their work. Monica Gokey is a producer of Outdoor Explorer. Grace Bojean is our production assistant, helps line up the guests. My name is Charles Wolforth. Thanks for being with us. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.